Good morning. Welcome to the 20th Annual Columbia Values Diversity Celebration. I'm Mayor Bob McDavid, and I will represent the Event Planning Committee today as Master of Ceremonies. We'd like to thank Paulo Eduardo Oliveira for the wonderful music we had during our breakfast. I'd like to remind everybody to turn off cell phones and remind you that if you need to leave early this morning, please do so through the side doors on the north side of the building. Please stand while the Columbia Fire Department Honor Guard presents the colors, and we enjoy the singing of our God Bless America by Kira Halim.
God bless America.
Please remain standing for the honor guard to leave and for an invocation written by Reverend Otto Steinhaus and read by community members Peter Altschul, Mira Shandgreshkar, Mia Asashi, Masood Hadari.
It is time.
Yes, it is time.
Time to give thanks
to a gracious God of many names. A time to give thanks for a vision
from the mountaintop
and a dream for us
and for our nation.
It is time to revisit that dream,
that important dream for all of us today and for our tomorrows.
And when we are crippled
by the chains of discrimination
and the feathers of prejudice,
we reclaim the dream
where we will not be judged
by the color of our skin
or our religious faith
or our gender
or our ethnicity
or our social ideas,
but judged
by the quality of our character.
Today we reclaim this dream
and pledge with our sacred honor to faithfully live and advance
the values of this dream,
to establish peace
and harmony
and equality
and justice for all
and for our nation.
So be it.
Amen and amen.
Thank you. On the back of your program, please find the many financial sponsors of the Diversity Celebration. We are sure that you have seen their company and organization names in the media, on our screens, and in the written program. Without their financial support, our event would not be possible. Also listed in the program are the many people involved in the planning and coordination of this event. You may be seated. This includes the members of the Columbia Values Diversity Celebration Planning Committee, which represents the diversity of our community, as well as the staff of the City County Division of Human Services. On your table, you will find a compilation of writings by students of the 4th through 12th grades from schools throughout Columbia. McDonald's Restaurants of Columbia has again generously sponsored the student writings program. The wonderful booklet was printed by Missouri Employers Mutual. Also on your table is a calendar of community events that commemorate Dr. King's birthday. Each year, the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday is a time at which we celebrate the life and teachings of Dr. King. I think we would all agree that although we still struggle with many of the issues with which he grappled, Dr. King's dream of equality and justice is alive and well. Today, we recognize both our similarities and our differences while celebrating who we are as people and who we are as a community. One of the reasons why Columbia is often recognized as one of the nation's best cities is because we have leadership that recognizes and promotes diversity as one of our most important assets. For this, the presentation of the 16th Annual Columbia Values Diversity Award, we are honored to once again have our mayor, Bob McDavid.
Each year, the City of Columbia gives both an individual award and a group award to persons and organizations whose work in the community exemplifies that of Dr. King. This year's nominees are listed in your program along with previous award winners. A panel of judges selected by the Planning Committee is charged with choosing the Columbia Values Diversity Award winners. This year's judges were Steve Calloway, Bill Clark, Masood Hadari, Deborah Hauenstein, Peter Stiepelman, and Sarah Reed. Their decisions are based on the publicized criteria of, number one, contributions promoting appreciation for diversity and cultural understanding in our community. Number two, community work which exemplifies the teachings of Dr. King in fostering individual dignity, racial equality, understanding, peacemaking, and solving problems through nonviolence. And number three, Engagement in this activity for an extended period of time with significant activity in Colombia in the preceding year. Colombia has many people who work for equal opportunity for all, so choosing from among so many deserving candidates is a difficult job. It's with great pleasure that I now present the 2013 Colombia Values Diversity Awards. The 2013 Colombia Values Diversity Award for Groups is presented to Job Point. Will representatives of Job Point please come forward? Job Point was created 47 years ago by the Columbia Cosmopolitan Luncheon Club. It realized that when given opportunity, all people have a contribution to make. This organization serves a diverse population. It tirelessly advocates for adults with disability and youth who are at risk, and veterans who have been disenfranchised. This organization seeks to improve diversity in the community through a number of programs like Youth Build, which assists disadvantaged youth to increase their education levels, obtain training in the construction field, and develop leadership abilities. Job Point's newest program, Civic Youth Corps, partners with the Harry S. Truman Veterans Hospital to improve veterans' homes while teaching youth vocational skills. Problems like these promote nonviolence and provide a safe, positive environment for at-risk youth. This organization promotes equality through its highway and heavy construction training by placing priority on serving individuals who belong to an ethnic minority or an economically disadvantaged group. Job Point also builds wheelchair ramps for disabled individuals, conducts weatherization for homebound seniors, and assists Habitat for Humanity build homes for low-income individuals. Job Point program centers around helping individuals create better lives for themselves and their families. These programs, coupled with the organization's strong commitment to social justice, exemplify the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. The 2013 Columbia Values Diversity Award for Individuals is presented to Tyree Bindham. Will Tyree come forward? Martin Luther King, Jr. stated, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." Anyone who knows Tyree Bindham will tell you that he is not a silent man. He promotes justice, tolerance, and social involvement by participating in a number of organizations that strive to enhance the lives of people in Columbia. Tyree has revitalized the Douglas Park Neighborhood Association. He moved his family back to the First Ward neighborhood so he can be an active in assisting with issues such as violence and drug prevention. Tyree has partnered with the National Society of Black Engineers and Columbia Public Schools to improve the lives of children and young adults. He's involved with the Minority Men's Network, PedNets Unite for Healthy Neighborhoods, Everybody Eats, and Columbia's Silence the Violence campaign. Through his three weekly radio shows on KOPN, Tyree strives to give voice to diverse topics and encourages a variety of people from different backgrounds to explore their ideas and beliefs and to discuss alternatives for solving problems. Like Martin Luther King Jr., Tyree is a shining example of an individual who has dedicated his life to service. He has an extraordinary ability to bring people from diverse ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds together to champion a cause and to promote equality and justice. His capacity for tolerance and understanding, paired with his ability to communicate with diverse groups of people, makes him a unifying force in our community. Congratulations, Tyree.
Thank you, Mayor McDavid, and congratulations to the winners of this year's awards. Now, under the direction of Dr. Clyde Ruffin, may I present The Dream Revisited.
A more humane nation is unparalleled in this century.
We are gathered to honor a man who has shown us the power of a strong mind, striving to better our community and strengthen our brotherhood.
We are gathered to honor Dr. Martin Luther King, a man who captured the spotlight of history and made us proud to walk in his shadow. Martin Luther King felt the pain of deferred dreams. But in spite of that, he never gave up on his dream that America could be a haven of equality, peace, and acceptance.
In the course of his civil rights work, Dr. King was jailed 14 times and stabbed once in the chest. His home was bombed 3 times, and his Daily Mail brought a steady flow of death threats and obscenities. And still, he worked 24 hours a day. traveled 325 miles a year and made more than 450 speeches a year throughout the country on behalf of injustice, holding fast to his dream.
To my Lord and be free.
Well, there's no more singing. There's
no more singing.
Hallelujah, singing
now. No more singing over me.
Over me, yeah.
And
yeah.
Before I be a slave.
As the greatest orator of our time, his immortal words resound as a clarion call, beckoning every generation to rise from the valley of despair to the mountaintop of hope.
The road is long.
When many a winding turn
that leads us to
to outrun our humanity. So we are in danger now of ending up with guided missiles in the hands of misguided men. We must learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools.
We must come to see that no individual can live alone. No nation can live alone. We must all live together. We must all be concerned about each other.
All life is interrelated. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be.
There will come a day when we shall bring into full realization the American dream, a dream of equality and opportunity, of privilege and property widely distributed. A dream of a nation where all our gifts and resources are held not for ourselves alone, but as instruments of service for the rest of humanity.
This faith can give our tired feet new strength as we continue our forward stride toward the city of freedom. And when our days become dreary, with low hovering clouds, and our nights become darker than a thousand midnights, we will know that we are living in the creative turmoil of a genuine civilization struggling to be born.
These are his words.
Let us go out with divine dissatisfaction. Let us be dissatisfied until the tragic walls of poverty and despair shall be crushed by the battering rams of the forces of justice.
Let us be dissatisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Until that day when the lion and the lamb shall lie down together and every man sit under his own vine and fig tree and none shall be afraid.
And men will recognize that out of one blood, God made all men to dwell upon the face of the earth. Like an idea whose time has come, not even the marching of mighty armies can halt us from moving to the land of freedom.
We shall not be moved like a tree planted by the water.
We shall not be moved
like the tree planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
Oh, because black and white are together, and
we shall not be moved.
We're black and white together.
We shall not be moved like the tree planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
It's
like a tree planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
Let us march on toward the realization of the American dream.
We shall not be moved.
Let us march until every vestige of segregated and inferior education becomes a thing of the past.
We shall not be moved.
Let us march until no starved man walks the streets of our cities and towns in search of jobs that do not exist.
We shall not be moved.
Let us march until poverty and broken lives and sweltering ghettos are mended and remolded.
We shall not be moved.
Let us march until our city councils, state legislatures, and the United States Congress will not fear to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God.
We shall not be moved.
Let us march until brotherhood becomes more than a meaningless word in an opening prayer, but the order of the day.
We shall not be moved.
Let us march until all God's children will be able to walk the earth in decency and honor.
Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me round, turn me round, turn me round. Turn me round.
Keep on walking,
keep on talking. up the freedom land.
Ain't gonna let no jailhouse
turn me round.
No, no.
Turn me round.
No, no.
Turn me round.
Ain't gonna let no jailhouse
turn me round.
I'm gonna
keep on walking.
I'm gonna
keep on talking. Marching up the freedom land.
Accept that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war, that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality.
Keep on walking, keep on talking, gonna build a brand new world.
Hallelujah.
truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality.
I believe that even amid today's mortar burst and whining bullets, there is still hope for a brighter tomorrow.
I believe that wounded justice lying prostrate on the blood-flowing streets of our nation can be lifted from the dust of shame to reign supreme among the children of men.
I have the audacity to believe that peoples everywhere can have three meals a day for their bodies, education and culture for their minds, and dignity, equality, and freedom for their spirits.
I still believe that one day mankind will bow before the altars of God and be triumphant over war and bloodshed.
I still believe that we shall overcome.
We shall live in peace.
We shall live in peace. We shall live in peace someday.
His words.
So I say to you that even though we must face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream, that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
I have a dream that one day little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today.
I still have a dream that one day the idle industries of Appalachia will be revitalized and the empty stomachs of Mississippi will be filled.
I still have a dream that one day war will come to an end, that men will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, that nations will no longer rise up against nations, neither will they study war no more.
I still have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, every mountain and hill will be made low, and the rough places will be made smooth, and the crooked places straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together.
With this faith, we will be able to speed up the day when there will be peace on earth and goodwill toward men. It will be a glorious day. The morning stars will sing together and the sons of God will shout for joy.
With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together. Knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, my country, tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside let freedom ring.
And when we allow freedom to ring, when we let it ring from every village and hamlet, from every state and city, we will be able to speed up that day when all God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Catholics and Protestants, will be able to join hands and to sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual,
free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last.
Oh, yes, we are.
Thank you.
Let us thank Beth Leonard, Clyde Ruffin, and the choir for the wonderful performance. Let's give them another hand. Now it is my pleasure and honor to introduce our keynote speaker, Martin Luther King III. As the eldest son of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Mrs. Coretta Scott King, Martin Luther King III is carrying the torch lit by both of his parents into the 21st century. Mr. King's dedication to creating and implementing strategic nonviolent action to rid the world of social, political, and economic injustice has propelled him to the forefront as one of the nation's most ardent advocates for the poor, the oppressed, and the disillusioned. Throughout his life, Martin Luther King III has worked with individuals deeply committed to the struggle for human rights and a nonviolent society. He is the recipient of numerous awards and several honorary degrees. He is both humbled and honored to serve as an ambassador of his parents' legacy of nonviolent social change. This is becoming a bit of a tradition, as we had the pleasure of hosting Mr. King's sister, Bernice, at the 10th anniversary of the celebration. Please join us in welcoming Martin Luther King III. I want to present you with this honorary Columbia Values Diversity Award.
Well, good morning. At least I think that's what it's supposed to be. It is truly an honor, and I must first thank God for bringing us all here this morning and starting us on our way. And I certainly hope and pray that our returns to our respective destinations this morning will be safe. Mr. Mayor, council members, other elected officials here today, religious leaders here today, business leaders, all members of this community and of this state of Missouri, but perhaps most of all to the children, the young people. For everything that we do is for those who come behind us, or at least what we should be doing. I'm truly honored to be in Columbia, Missouri this morning as we approach the federal holiday designated to honor the life and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. This year being unique because it also it falls on the day that we will re-inaugurate President of the United States of America. Before I get started, I want to just take care of a couple of housekeeping issues. And we certainly were all moved and inspired and uplifted by the, not just words, of course, the words of Dad and others integrated, but the music and the entire, I guess, performance was outstanding. Outstanding. And secondly, I want to say one of my childhood friends is a member of this community, happens to be sitting at the table with us, Brother Thaddeus Hamilton, who teaches at Jefferson, I want to say middle school, but you all know Jefferson Junior. And Thaddeus and I went to play football together. We attempted to play football. We weren't that good. At least I wasn't. We played basketball. We grew up in the same neighborhood in the city of Atlanta. And so it is so wonderful to see him. We haven't seen each other in a number of years. But it's always wonderful when you travel and you are able to see the friends that you've known over the years. So I'm also glad to see Thaddeus, but I'm glad to be in Missouri, and it's not, the weather's not too bad. The mayor was sharing that it usually is snowing this time of year, and so we're not going to be here long because it could change. We're going to get out as soon as we can. But in all seriousness, special time of the year for my family. And yesterday, my wife and daughter joined me as I spoke at Georgia Tech. And earlier during the week, on Tuesday, I was in Washington. Tuesday was January 15th. Had my father lived, he would have been 84 years old on Tuesday. And as I think about this birthday observance, this is number one, an incredible year of anniversaries, the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, the 45th anniversary of the sanitation worker strike in Memphis, tragically where Dad was killed, 45 years since his passing, the 45th anniversary of the Poor People's Campaign, very important because 45 years ago, Martin Luther King Jr. was attempting to bring together poor blacks and whites and Native Americans and Americans from all walks of life to say to our nation's policymakers that we must create the climate so that people can, in fact, have really a living wage, not a minimum wage, but a living wage. He was way ahead of his time. And 45 years later, tragically, there are more people who are living in poverty, 60 million plus in our nation. Many were close to achieving elements of their dream, owning homes. And then the foreclosure crisis occurred, and tragically, some are thrust back into poverty. And so we've got to find a way to recreate an environmental culture and a entrepreneur spirit so that we can find ways to create opportunities for the people of our nation. But Dad was on that issue 45 years ago. This will be the 50th anniversary of the letter writing from the Birmingham jail where Dad challenged the clergyman to be engaged in creating a climate of truth and justice and to be involved, not on the sidelines. And this will be, just to name a few, that's not all of the anniversaries, but the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, where he delivered the I Have a Dream speech he heard just recently. So an exciting year. And then, of course, on Monday, when the president is sworn in, he will be using, in addition to President Lincoln's Bible, a traveling Bible that my father used. And so it is an extraordinary honor for our family. Some of us will be in Washington on Monday when he is publicly sworn in. So while this is a great time of challenge, it also is a great time of opportunity. And I want to first commend the city of Columbia, Missouri, and the committee for engaging in this activity for 20 years. I'm honored to be your 20th year speaker. Because when I think about the words, choices, diversity, community, love, tolerance, acceptance, compassion, understanding, unity, kindness, respect, and harmony, I think about the fact that many of those words, if not all, represented what my dad wanted to achieve for our nation. Because everything that he and his team did was around creating opportunities for those who come behind us, trying to make this world a better place for all of God's children. In fact, I remember when Thaddeus and I were at Spring Street School in Atlanta, around third grade or fourth grade, and some of the kids used to joke with me about my dad being a jailbird. And as a child, you know, now we have, when I was growing up, we joked and we called it joning, but today they hating, it's player hating. And I mean, it's unfortunate that we've evolved in that direction. We need to evolve in player loving, well, loving. Personifying love is what I mean. I don't, I'll let you. And not hating, but I remember that, and I was troubled and bothered by those kids. And I went home, and I remember my mom saying, well, your dad is going to jail to make our world a better place for all of God's children. And I came to school the next day with a renewed sense, not an arrogance, but a confidence, feeling good about what Dad and his team were doing. I mean, I at some point came to the conclusion that if problems existed, that what you needed to do was go to jail and resolve them, because that's what Daddy did. I mean, he went to jail with his colleagues, and things changed. I mean, we lived in a city in the 60s where there was an amusement park comparable to a Six Flags or a Great American Theme Park. In our city, it was called Funtown. Today, we have Six Flags, of course. But we couldn't go for the first few years. We'd drive Dad to the airport, drop him off, and Yolanda and I, the older children, would see other children playing at Funtown, and we could not go. But Dad and his team knocked down those barriers. And, of course, once we were able to go, you forgot about the fact that you never could, because it was most exhilarating as an experience to be able to ride the Ferris wheel and the roller coaster and the bumper cars and eat things like candy, apples, and cotton candy that you didn't eat. But wonderful experience. So, you know, my dad and his team were focused. They were determined. They were dependable. And when I come to this period every year, I'm always hoping that we never reduce this holiday to a traditional holiday. When we think of holiday, we think of relaxing. We think of eating certain foods. In the South, well, really all around the country, and I guess not far from here, another state, folks go and grab a little Gates barbecue. But that's not what I'm talking about. We don't necessarily want to ever relegate a King holiday to a day of barbecue, unless, of course, we've totally fulfilled the dream. When that happens, or realize the dream, then we maybe can eat a little barbecue and some other things and celebrate. So I always say we observe the King holiday, but I'm certainly thankful that the climate was created to have a day to observe. Because certainly during this weekend, people around our nation will be engaged in service. Dad used to say, "He who is greatest among you shall be your servant." And we'll have hundreds of thousands of people engaging in service throughout the weekend on Saturday and Sunday. And those who are not able to come to Washington on Monday, the actual holiday. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we could get millions, and we can, in our nation to engage in service once a month throughout the year, so that our service becomes a service of lifetime. Just think how much and how better our society would change, even just once a month, if we were engaged in something in our community that is about positive social change. We could change our nation and ultimately change the world. And so the King holiday gives us a chance to start anew. We did not achieve or realize the dream last year. Yes, we've realized many elements of his dream, but we've still got a ways to go. For he wanted to eradicate poverty, racism, and militarism and violence from our society. We've come a long way around race, a long way. Are we there yet? No, but we've made phenomenal strides. We are a far better nation than we were. In poverty, unfortunately, we haven't come so far. Because, as I said, we have more proportionately in poverty now than we did as he was coming along. And that campaign that he was working on, the Poor People's Campaign, he did not live to see it come to fruition. And so in a real sense, his work was interrupted. But the work still must be done and completed by all of us. Because I really believe we live in a nation, even with a terrible economy, we still live in the greatest nation in the world. We are still the greatest economic powerhouse. We have more ability and also more debt than anybody else. We've got to find a way to address the debt, by the way. We cannot continue the runaway train of debt. But there's a responsible way to address the debt and still create opportunities. Because every person in America, everyone should be able to have a decent home. Now, I don't mean everyone should have a $1 million home. Some will. Some, certainly, that is fine. But in the United States of America, where we have hundreds of thousands and millions, actually, of people who are homeless, that should be unacceptable. And we all, I believe, have a responsibility to figure out how do we address this. In the United States of America, where every year young people are graduating from colleges and universities, and yet they are not able to find employment, something has gone awry. And so we've got to find a way to roll up our sleeves and address that issue so that every child or young person can achieve an element of his or her dream. As I say, everyone should have a home, some kind of dwelling in this nation with all the wealth that we have here. Billions and billions of dollars. And even though cities and states have deficits now, and, you know, none of us want to pay taxes, any more taxes, I should say. We want to pay taxes, really. We understand services. But my goodness, I feel like I'm paying too much in taxes, just like everybody else probably does. But I do also believe that some of us who have a little more income should be able to do a little bit more to be helpful in this interim period. So I'm not trying to be political. I'm just saying what I believe. You can embrace it, believe it, or you don't have to. That's fine. See, that's the beauty of what this country provides, and that is an opportunity for each of us to have our points of view. But we're not going to denigrate anyone else because they may differ. It's all right for us to have differences. Now, I was just thinking because I was wondering, many of our senators and congresspeople, there are a number of them who are very wealthy, and that is wonderful. But then there are some who are not as wealthy, and they make good money, but they're not as wealthy. But I've been trying to figure out, why are you trying to protect somebody else's money that is not you? I understand personally us protecting our own money. We all have to do that. But when we talk about the United States of America and what is good for everyone, what's going to help lift all boats, it's hard to understand that notion that you're not in that category. You're not in the 1%. Most of us are not. There are probably some 1%ers here, but most of us are not. And it's all right to be in that 1%. However, and many of those, or some of those, I should say, are making phenomenal contributions every day in some way to our society. But we've got to find a way, my point is, to create more opportunity. And that's what my dad's mission was about. That's what he was about. How do we make America the best America that it can become? And then he talked about militarism and violence. And I know, you know, we're having a great debate about guns and gun control, and I don't want to get into that specifically other than to say that, you know, I would perhaps should be one of those who is a strong gun advocate. My dad was killed when I was 10 years old by an assassin's bullet. My uncle mysteriously drowned when I was 11. My dad's mother was gunned down in the church while playing the Lord's Prayer. She was an organist for our church. So I should be certainly a candidate for having as many guns as possible. And I'm thankful that, you know, again, I certainly want all of our amendments and our rights to be available to us. But I don't understand a debate about these weapons that the high caliber guns that we're debating about. I mean, even sport, you know, you have these guns that shoot 100 bullets. That's not fair to the animals. I mean, you know. But the higher point is, why do we even need them? And the tragedy is, it took 20 children, precious children, my daughter's age, 6 adults, before the nation finally said, oh my God, we got to do something. I mean, the reality is, whether it's St. Louis or Kansas City or other cities all across America, my city or Chicago, every day, every week, some young man, or even now young women and children, are being killed by guns. Now you can say, well, the gun doesn't kill people. You're right. I mean, the gun itself, it won't jump up and, you know, kill people. But when you put guns in hands and you have a culture of violence that is consistently promoted, and we sort of accept it. I mean, think about it. Six out of 10 cartoons are violent. 6 out of 10 television shows are violent. 7 out of 10 video games are violent. And then we go to movie theaters and 6 out of 10 of the movies we see are violent. And so we've created a culture of violence and we embrace it, as opposed to saying, how do we create a culture of nonviolence, a culture of tolerance, a culture of compassion,
a culture of understanding. And see, that has to come from all of us as Americans working together and saying we are not going to accept what we are being forced to be fed every day. That's the best in America. You know, quite frankly, we are a people that respond during crisis. We reach deep down to the depths of our souls, and when there's a crisis, whether it's a hurricane or tsunami or tornado, an earthquake, any kind of catastrophe, just recently in New York and New Jersey, Americans were responding and are still responding just to help. When people are in crisis, you don't ask, what's your sexual orientation? Oh, what religion are you? Oh, what do you believe? Are you a Christian or Jewish? Are you atheist? No, we just help. That's the best of what America is. Every crisis, we respond. Americans do. Now, we shouldn't have to be in crisis to respond. If we could create a condition where we were responding consistently, after the crisis is gone, we go back to our corners. But if we could consistently create that kind of climate, just think what kind of nation we could have. You see, I had to learn forgiveness. And my father, when he was gone down, we never ever, when we thought it was James Earl Ray who came up into Missouri, I'm not going to go into that a lot, but we thought it was James Earl Ray was just a patsy. We found out he didn't even shoot. He didn't shoot or anything. He was involved in some way, but we never hated James Earl Ray. Marcus Wayne Chenault, who killed my grandmother, we never hated him. In fact, Granddaddy went to visit him in prison in the county jail in Atlanta. Granddaddy had a great relationship with the sheriff and the sheriff's deputies in Atlanta. And he walked with a cane as he got older. He had a car accident in the 60s, and he needed a cane to get around, a big, strong cane. And so he went to visit Marcus Wayne Chenault with my brother and cousin. And Chenault, he said, son, why did you kill my wife? And Chenault looked up at him, and he said, as soon as I get out of here, I'm going to come and get you. Now, Granddaddy could have taken his cane and hit him upside his head. Whop! And the sheriffs would have just laughed. They would have said, that's great. We understand. But you know what he did? He said, son, I'm going to pray for you because I know prayer changes things. Now, understand what that example did for us as his grandchildren, to hear my cousin and brother seeing it and us to hear about it. See, he used to say, I love everybody. I'm every man's brother. You may say you're not mine, but that's your issue. I don't have time to hate. The price of hatred is too great a burden to bear. And so I'm not saying that everybody has to be that way. I'm just sharing an example of what we can be, because, you know, I think that personification is again the best of who we as Americans are and can become. My dad left us a blueprint, and the world needs now more than ever to embrace the blueprint. There's conflict all over the world, in the Middle East, in Africa, in Mali, and all around the world, there's some kind of conflict. But if we learned how to live as brothers and sisters, how to share resources, then maybe we could resolve some of this conflict that exists and certainly make the world better for all of our children. I would hope that's the kind of legacy that all of us would like to leave, or I believe generally most of us would. But we have to work at it. Nothing comes easy. See, now my dad, he taught us how to love unconditionally, and my grandfather and my mother. He used to say that the highest level of love was defined by the word agape. And it meant a love that is totally unselfish, seeking nothing in return. You love someone if they're old or young, rich or poor, black or white, Native American or Hispanic or Latino American, African or Asian. You love them because you know that God calls you to do that. And that's the kind of love we need to embrace if we want to move America truly forward. That unselfish love. He used to tell us that in life you gotta find out what your calling is. And when you find that calling, you must do your job well. He said you must do that job so well that the living, the dead, or the unborn could do that job no better. He went on to say, even in life, if it falls your lot to be a street sweeper, why go on and sweep streets like Michelangelo carved marble. Sweep streets like Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Sweep streets like Raphael painted pictures. Sweep streets so well that all the host of the heavens and earth would have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper that did his job well. He went on to say that Douglas Malick captured it another way by saying, if you cannot be a pine on the top of the hill, just be a shrub in the valley, but be the best little shrub on the side of the road. Be a bush if you cannot be a tree. If you cannot be a highway, just be a trail. If you cannot be the sun, just be a star, for it isn't by size that you win or you fail. You've just got to be the best of what you are. Our challenge, my friends, is to make our nation and our world better for our children. And so I close with this story. I was probably 10 or 12 years old when I had the opportunity to visit with my mom, her undergraduate institution, Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And there was something on that campus that made an indelible impact upon my life. And it was a statue of the educator Horace Mann. It was not the statue, but it was the words that were inscribed under the statue. Those words said, "Be ashamed to die unless you've won a victory for humanity." You may say, "Well, Brother King, that's grandiose." No. Let me explain it this way. You see, you can win a victory in your neighborhood. We can win victories in our schools. We can win victories in our places of worship. Some of us may win victories in our city, some even in our county. Others yet may win victories in our state, and some may even win victories in our nation. And a few may even win victories in our world. But those words basically say, be ashamed to die until you've done a little something to make the world in which we all must live a little better than it was when we arrived. Thank you very much, and may God continue to bless each of you always.
Mr. King, for being a part of our community's celebration of your father's life and teachings. This concludes the 2013 Columbia Values Diversity Celebration. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we look forward to seeing you next year.